You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It begins with a growl, not outside in the woods and not down the street, but inside your home. From a speaker that isn't playing, from a corner of the room you're not facing, from somewhere that shouldn't be there at all. Tonight's story is not about a haunted house in the traditional sense. There's no blood running down the walls, no phantom girl in white at the end of the hallway, no mirror cracking at midnight. No, this haunting is far stranger, more intimate, and in some ways more disturbing. A young woman living alone begins noticing things, things that could easily be dismissed at first. A trembling bed frame, a cardboard cutout falling without explanation, the cold stare of something unseen. All of it adding up to a quiet question that builds louder and louder in the back of the mind. Is someone or something trying to get in? She turns to an old protector, a spiritual ally named Eris, fierce, sharp-tongued, and loyal, but even with Eris by her side. The energy in the house has shifted. The disturbances escalate, the growling returns, and in the middle of a meditative state meant for clarity, an unexpected guest arrives. She's childlike, she's grinning, she's got wings, and she says her name is Sin. What follows is a bizarre, unsettling, and deeply personal negotiation with something that isn't human, but isn't entirely hostile either. A thing drawn to pain and chaos, and for reasons unknown, it has chosen to stay. Let's get to the letter. They write, "I don't really know where to begin, but I guess the best place is where things first started feeling off. I've lived in this house for a few years now. It's nothing special, just a one-story place in a quiet neighborhood, old trees in the yard, neighbors who mostly keep to themselves. The kind of house where things should feel peaceful. But lately, I've had the persistent feeling that I'm not the only one here. And I don't mean that in the someone broke in kind of way. I mean that something's watching, listening, waiting. It started small. My bed would shake just a little. Not enough to scare me, just enough to confuse me. At first, I blamed the dogs outside, then I blamed my imagination. But it kept happening. I'd be lying there still and feel it. A subtle tremble, like something pushing from underneath. It didn't feel violent, just wrong. Then came the staring. I can't explain how I knew I was being watched, but I did. I'd lie there with my eyes shut, heart pounding in the dark, convinced that if I opened them, I'd see someone standing over me. I never did. But the feeling never left. I even bought blackout curtains, thinking maybe light from outside was casting strange shadows. But no, wasn't the light. One night I woke up to a loud thump. One of my life-sized cardboard cutouts had toppled over. I collect them, characters I like, things from conventions, little pieces of fun. They've always stood just fine. But this one had fallen flat, face down. I figured maybe it wasn't propped well. I stood it back up. Then another one fell the next night, and then another. Always when I was in bed, always after midnight. It was as if something didn't want them standing anymore. I double-checked the bases, tested their balance, nothing made sense. I started avoiding eye contact with them at night. I didn't want to look at their silhouettes in the dark. Still, I rationalized. It's a weird house. Maybe it's settling. Maybe it's airflow. Maybe it's just me being dramatic. But then came the noise. It happened when I was on a video call with a friend, someone I trust, someone who knows I'm not prone to wild claims. We were laughing about something when we both heard it. A low, rumbling growl coming from my speakers. Not static, not distortion. A growl, long, deep, and unmistakable. My friend's face froze. She asked if I had a dog in the room. I didn't. I was alone. We both went silent. Then, in the bravest voice I could muster, I said, "Leave me alone." The growling stopped. It came back the next night, and every time I'd ask it to stop, sometimes it listened, sometimes it didn't. It felt like a game of control, like something was testing how far it could go before I'd snap. I tried ignoring it. I tried lighting sage, placing crystals, saying prayers. Even though I'm not religious, I didn't care. I just wanted to sleep without fear. I even started leaving lights on in the hallway, just in case whatever it was didn't like the brightness. That's when I decided to reach out to Eris. You probably need some background there. Eris isn't a ghost. She isn't a figment. She's been with me since I was a teenager. I met her during a guided meditation years ago when I was going through a really dark time. She showed up, tall, fierce, dressed in shadows and light, claws like obsidian, hair like fire, and an attitude to match. She never claimed to be an angel or anything divine. She just said, "I'm here to protect you if you'll let me." And from that moment on, she's been there, quiet mostly. But when I'm scared or hurting, she shows up. This time, I needed her more than ever. I lit a candle, closed my eyes, focused my breathing. I called out to her, not with words, but with intention. Within minutes, I felt her presence. "Something's in the house," I said aloud. "I know," she replied, calm but sharp. "It's feeding off the tension, off you." "What is it?" She paused, "not from here." We fell into meditation together like we've done before. It helps center me, helps draw the line between me and everything else. Usually after a session with Eris, things calm down, but not this time. It started with a sound, a low roar, like a lion in the distance. It wasn't coming from outside. It was inside my mind, inside the room, inside her voice. "You hear that?" I asked. "Yes," she said. "Ignore it." "Can you make it stop?" "If it knows what's good for it, it'll go away." But it didn't. The sound circled us like wind. Then I saw her. A little girl, maybe 6 or 7 in appearance, though everything about her screamed not human. She had long black hair, glowing red eyes, and leathery wings curled behind her like a bat. She was perched casually, impossibly, on Eris's head. She giggled. "What is that?" I asked. Before Eris could respond, she reached up, grabbed the thing by the arm, and threw her off. The childlike figure flipped midair, landed perfectly, and bounced like a child on a sugar rush. She laughed again, unbothered. Eris snarled, claws extending. "Wait," I said. "Just wait." I turned to the girl. "Who are you?" "I'm Sin," she said, beaming. "Is that your name?" She shook her head. "It's what I do." "And what exactly is that?" I make things messy. I like making people crazy, but you're boring. I blinked. Excuse me? You don't break easy. That's no fun. Eris growled again. Did you bring that lion sound? I asked. She nodded. He's mine. Why are you here? Your house is loud, she said, spinning on one foot. So much sadness. So much anger. I could taste it from across the veil. You're feeding off it? She tilted her head. Not feeding. More like dancing in it. I sighed. Do you mean me harm? She paused, then shrugged. Number, I just like chaos. I rub my temples and then leave. No. Why not? I'm bored, she pouted. But you're interesting. You're like a puzzle that doesn't want to be solved. Can you behave? Maybe. Eris was fuming. I said, you can stay if you stop messing with my sleep. She grinned. Deal. I knew I'd probably regret it, but part of me was too exhausted to fight. I opened my eyes, the candle still flickering beside me. The room felt heavier. Later that night, I texted my boyfriend. You're not going to believe this, I wrote. I think I just adopted a demon child. He laughed. Not out of disbelief, but because he knows me. He's used to the strange stuff, and strangely, he wanted to meet her. The next day, my boyfriend came over. He was curious, more amused than concerned. He's got a way of keeping things light, even when they're objectively not. I'd barely said a word when I felt the shift in the room. Ice. She'd already started calling herself that by then, was present. She liked the name Isis, which we'd jokingly given her because she said she came from around that area, but she preferred ice. She said it made her sound cooler. She was bouncing, literally, on the couch armrest, even though no one else could see her. My boyfriend asked to speak with her directly. I warned him she could be unpredictable. But when he addressed her out loud, "So, ice, huh?" she responded like a kid at a birthday party. "Hi," she chirped. "You're the metal one." That was the beginning of it. Ice had opinions. She didn't like my boyfriend's spirits, the ones he'd worked with before. She called one of them itchy and said another smelled like rotting wood. But despite the sass, she was polite, at least for her standards. She seemed entertained by him. She liked that he wasn't scared. And in a way that bothered me more than I wanted to admit, she liked him more than me. That night we went for a drive. He put on music, his kind of music, heavy metal, loud and fast, Slipknot, I think. I grimaced at the noise, but before I could complain, I felt something leap in the back seat. Ice! She was there, spinning in place, headbanging, absolutely euphoric. This! She shouted, only I could hear her. This is what home sounds like. I turned down the volume and she glared at me. My boyfriend laughed without knowing why. I didn't tell him until later. The next few days were strange. Ice was ever present. I'd wake up and feel her perched on my dresser. I'd walk into the kitchen and feel a small tug on the back of my shirt, like a toddler trying to get attention. She talked constantly. She didn't sleep. She asked a million questions. What's that noise? Why does that light blink? Why do humans cry? Do your bones crack when you die? Some days she'd vanish for hours. Other days she'd sit next to me and trace invisible patterns on the wall. When I asked her what she was doing, she said she was remembering. Remembering what? What it was like before. I asked her what that meant. She didn't answer. One night I finally pushed. Where are you really from? I asked. She floated, literally floated, toward the ceiling, upside down. Where all broken things go, she said. Where people don't talk to each other anymore. Where everything's loud and no one listens. Then she giggled and disappeared. I didn't sleep well that night. Eris, meanwhile, had gone quiet. She only appeared when I called her, and even then she was distant, watchful. She didn't trust Ice. Said she had seen spirits like her before. Said they were ancient and clever and not nearly as innocent as they pretended to be. She's playing a long game, Harris warned. You are not her first home. Has she done harm? Harris looked at me. Does it matter? One morning, I woke with a start. My heart was pounding. I couldn't move. It was sleep paralysis, but different. The air in the room was dense, pressurized. My ears rang. And then I heard it, the growl again. Not through the speakers, not in my head, right next to me, low, wet breathing. And it was breathing with me. I tried to scream. Nothing came out. Then I felt it, hot breath against my neck. My skin crawled. I turned my eyes as far as I could, and in the shadows at the edge of the room, I saw them. Two glowing red slits, watching. Not ice, him, the lion. The air snapped back. I could move. I sat up, gasping. The room was freezing. My blanket was on the floor. My cutouts were all knocked over. Ice wasn't there. The next night, I asked her what had happened. She looked at me, unusually quiet. You weren't supposed to see him, she said. Why not? He gets excited when people notice. Is that why you're here? Did you bring him with you? She looked down at her feet. He comes where I go, she whispered. Is he dangerous? To others, yes. And to me? She tilted her head like she was calculating. Number, not anymore. Not anymore? You're different now. He listens to you. That didn't make me feel better. I asked Eris about it later. She didn't mince words. He's a predator. He'll circle you forever if you let him. Can I make him leave? Only if she does. And she won't. I confronted Ice that night. I need boundaries, I said. You can't just bring things here and act like it's a sleepover. This is my home. She looked hurt, genuinely hurt. I didn't mean to scare you. But you did. She was quiet for a long time. Then she asked, do you want me to leave? And here's the part I didn't expect, and I said no. Not because I wanted her to stay, not because I trusted her, but because in some strange, maddening way, she belonged here now. The house had changed. I had changed. Sending her away would be like throwing out a piece of myself. Chaotic, unpredictable, uncomfortable. But undeniably, mine. I want you to respect the space, I told her. She nodded. And no more growling from the lion. He'll try. Make him succeed. She promised she would. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what she'll become. But for now, she's part of this strange little corner of my world. Eris still watches her like a hawk. The lion paces, mostly out of view, and me, I sleep with one eye open. Because something tells me this is just the beginning. Sincerely, Marla. What makes this case so compelling isn't just the presence of a spirit or even two spirits. It's the negotiation. The unsettling idea that a haunting doesn't always begin with fear, but with curiosity. Let's start with the psychological. Could Ice, this childlike demon figure, be a manifestation of something internal? A dissociative construct born from isolation or emotional overload? Marla describes a long-standing connection with Eris, a protector developed during early trauma. It's not uncommon for people with rich inner lives to externalize those forces as a form of coping, naming them, shaping them, interacting with them. It doesn't mean it isn't real to them. It means the mind may be doing what it's evolved to do, survive at all costs. But then there's the other side of the coin, the one we're not always comfortable facing, and the growling, the shaking, the visible forms. The fact that her friend heard it too, through the speakers. These aren't just personal impressions. They're shared experiences. Ice knew things, reacted to things, and brought with her something darker. Something that watched. And perhaps most troubling, that thing. The lion, it wasn't hers, not completely. It moved independently. It responded to attention. It had rules of its own. And it only became visible when Marla was most vulnerable. It raises an unsettling possibility. What if spirits like Ice aren't just nuisances, but openings? And what if the things that follow them in are worse? In trying to control the chaos, Marla didn't banish it. She invited it to behave. She made peace with a presence that thrives on negative energy. A truce, not a cleansing. And that may be the most chilling part of all. Because sometimes the most dangerous spirits aren't the ones you fear. They're the ones you learn to live with.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.